Hello, my friends. It's Thursday, March 13th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We got a great program for you this morning in the news today. Pete Buttigieg is aiming for a 2028 presidential run rather than the Senate seat from Michigan. We'll take a look at a couple of progressives getting out there on the road. That's Bernie Sanders and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz that are holding town hall meetings all across the country. We've got RFK Jr. once again promoting more disease in the United States of America. This time, we'll take a look at his effect on HPV vaccinations. The EPA administrator, Lee Zeldin, is attacking climate funds and accusing groups of taking EPA money of committing fraud. We'll get deep into the weeds on that one. And a global response of countries now that are joining a boycott USA movement, responding to the King Felon the First mad tariff schemes that keep popping up every other day. We'll do another look at our Boycott Idaho segment with some brand new news from Idaho about a teacher and her attempt to promote inclusion in the classroom. And we'll wrap things up with a look at our military and how our Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, has been lying about the readiness of transgender soldiers in the United States military. It's all coming up today on The Radical Russ Show. Before we get too deep into today's topics, I did want to wrap up a few extra notes on some of the things I've covered in previous shows this week. First of all, a little bit of good news. I drive a little Chevy Volt, plug-in electric car that I call Vicky Volt. And I've got some stickers on that car, including a sticker of Martin Luther King Jr. that says Woke AF. And a sticker on the back bumper that says Black Lives Matter. Now, in the past, living here in Southern Oregon, the state of Jefferson region in particular, this has been a little bit difficult. On a previous show, I talked about how the closest town to me, Grants Pass, was the last sundown town in the state of Oregon. There's a bit of a problem with racism out here. And so one night after I got done playing a gig with the band I used to be in, someone left a note on my car, and it was, you know, tucked under the windshield wiper. And it was terrible. It was this little note that said something like, go back to California, you fucking BLM racist. All lives matter, I think was pretty close to what it said. And it kind of shook me up a little bit that someone would take the time to do such a thing. And then later on, my lady love and I took her vehicle, a GMC Acadia, to Bossier City, Louisiana to visit her mother. Bossier City, Louisiana, you might know, is the home district of the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, very Republican area. And when I was out at a shopping center with that car, and that car didn't even have any woke stuff on it or BLM stuff on it, just a Harris Walz campaign sticker, you know, Harris Walz for President sticker, right? Just that. That was the only sticker on the damn car. I come back from the shopping center, someone had keyed the entire left side of the car, big, massive gouge all the way down to the metal. So I did a heck of a job keying it, right? So just the other day, last week, I was coming out of another shopping center to my Vicky Volt car with my lady love, and we get in the car and we take off. And as I'm driving, I notice, oh, there's a note under the windshield. Oh, great. Oh boy. Another one of these, right? So we pulled over so I could get the note. And to my surprise, the note said, and I'll read it directly, "It's nice to see a car with good people energy stickers in this town. Little heart face. Have a great weekend. Little smiley face." So to whoever it was out there providing the positive vibes for my Black Lives Matter and woke as fuck sticker, thank you so very much. In another note that I wanted to get to, we talked yesterday about the attempts or the desire by King Felon the First to annex Canada as the 51st state. you know, this ridiculous notion he has of annexing Canada. But then I got to thinking about it. That wouldn't necessarily be such a bad thing, politically speaking. We're talking, what, 30 million people in Canada? And aside from Alberta and a bit of Manitoba, they're generally some pretty liberal people, especially, you know, compared to the political spectrum down here, right? Even their conservatives would be kind of liberal for here. So does Donnie really want to add a 51st state with 30 million people, the second largest state in the United States, that would then bring two more Democratic senators and, I don't know, plus 30 Democratic representatives in the House? I don't really think he's thinking that through. Now, don't worry, Canada, I don't support annexing you. I think that's ridiculous, but it just goes to show that he doesn't really think through these things, does he? And my final little note before we get started on the main topics, a terrible post that came out yesterday on the Truth Toilet from Trump, where he was attacking Chuck Schumer, saying that as far as he's concerned, Chuck Schumer is not Jewish. Chuck Schumer is a Palestinian. So that's always good when the authoritarian leader is trying to decide who is and isn't Jewish enough. And it's clear that he doesn't understand Palestinian as some sort of regional ethnicity. He just thinks Palestinian equals Hamas equals terrorist. Those things are not true at all. But again, shame on Donald Trump for questioning the Jewish identity of the highest ranking Jewish official in the United States government. Oh, and one other quick note before I forget it. Yesterday I played the clip where Sarah McBride, the first openly transgender member of Congress, was on a hearing where the Republican chair, Keith, what was the fellow's name? Keith Self, there we go, where the Republican chair, Keith Self, purposefully misgendered Sarah McBride, and the Democrat, the ranking Democrat, Mr. Keating, on the dais, chastised him for it. And let me just replay that clip for you, because there was something I forgot to point out about it yesterday.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ranking Member Keating, also wonderful.
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat your introduction again, please?
Okay, so I'm not going to play all the rest of that, because that goes on where Keating says, you know, how dare you? You got to treat it. You know, how would you say that? Blah, blah, blah. He, you know, it did a good job calling it out. But I forgot to mention the excellent response from Sarah McBride that got kind of lost in the shuffle. When the Republican says, the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride, and McBride responds, thank you, Madam Chairman. That's perfect. And this dates back, and it kind of got lost because the ranking Democrat then, you know, steps all over and, you know, gets offended. But that's such the perfect response. And it actually came from a clip that I saw earlier, maybe last month, that came out of the Wyoming house, in their state house. I think it was Wyoming, where a transgender person was addressing the committee, and the committee misgendered her. And she came back and said, well, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And the chair said, I'm Mr. Chairman. You have to address me in that way. And she brought up the fact that in the state of Wyoming, they passed this law that said you cannot be compelled to use someone's preferred pronouns. And so she brought it up. She said, I'm sorry, Madam Chairwoman. According to Wyoming law, I can't be compelled to use your personal pronouns. So that's exactly what should happen. Every time someone misgenders a trans person in one of these hearings, misgender them back. Politico is reporting that Pete Buttigieg, the former Secretary of Transportation and Mayor of South Bend, Indiana, is expected to announce today that he will not run for the open Senate seat in the state of Michigan, and instead is looking for a 2028 presidential bid. The theory here is that if he tried to run for Senate in 26 and won, it would be tough to then run a successful run in 2028 for the presidency. He has been meeting, looking at that Senate campaign, where the retiring Senator Gary Peters is vacating his seat. Republicans really think they can pick that up and help swing the Senate even more to their side, while Democrats are looking, of course, to keep that seat. Now, Buttigieg, great candidate, great guy as far as being a communicator, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know about this because, look, let me just be blunt about it. America, I don't know if we're ready to vote for Pete Buttigieg. And I just want to look at our past few elections, right? We went with Barack Obama in 2008, and we won big. And then Barack Obama in 2012, and we won again, but lost ground in that second election. He lost about 3 points worth of the vote. And then in 2016, we decide to run a woman, and we lose to the worst human being ever, Donald Trump. In 2020, we run a straight white guy in Joe Biden, and it's the first election in which more people voted for either the Democrat or the Republican than did not vote, at least since going back to 1976. And then we come around in 2020 and we run a black woman and we lose again to the worst human being ever. So is it the right political strategy to then follow up with a gay man? I got no problem with it. I'm absolutely fine. You know, I'll vote for a gay candidate, a trans candidate, a black candidate, a disabled candidate, a Jewish candidate, a Muslim candidate. Hell, give me an atheist candidate for once. I'd love it. But I'm not the issue. The issue is the voters of the United States of America. Are we going to put all the eggs into that basket, get behind Pete Buttigieg, only to find that a lot of the people that said they would vote for a gay man, when it really comes down to it, won't do so? It's bless him for wanting to go for it. And it's not like he's not qualified for the job. I think he'd be a fantastic president, at least, you know, as centrists go. But I don't know. I don't know. Maybe, you know, we should look at the fact that the only election we've won since 2012 was won by a white guy. And also, there's this perception that's growing amongst white guys out here that the Democratic Party doesn't have a spot for us, that we're like tolerated at best, that we're the cause of all the world's problems at worst. So is the timing right for this, with the rise of white identity politics on the right? Is the timing right for us to go all in on being the not white guy party? Now, I don't know what white guy I'd suggest. It definitely wouldn't be Gavin Newsom these days. You've seen what he's been doing. His latest podcast guest, after he had Charlie Kirk on. Now, I guess he's going to have Steve Bannon on. Oh, my God. The memes that are going around about this with Gavin Newsom welcoming, you know, Hannibal Lecter to the podcast. You know, who else is he going to invite to talk to? Who else is he going to platform? So it's not Gavin Newsom, and I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head who's really poised for that kind of a run. I'd like to see Kamala Harris run again, too. But again, are we going to be able to pass to win a national election by running someone who isn't a white guy? I want to believe it's possible, and we know it can work because Barack Obama did it. We know it's possible. I guess we'll all have to cross our fingers and wait. Speaking of straight white guys, we got a couple of them that are taking their show out on the road, providing some leadership where the Democratic Party has definitely fallen short. Talking, of course, about independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who's now gone on this tour, this fighting oligarchy tour. And it was also announced that Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota and our most recent vice presidential candidate, will also be heading out to hold town halls in Republican districts where the Republicans are refusing to hold town halls. And this is exactly the type of leadership that we are looking for. We have seen the Democratic Party, from Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries on down, seem to have adopted this plan, if you will, to just sit back and let the Republicans implode. This comes down to what James Carville recently said. James Carville, the raging Cajun, said the Democrats should roll over and play dead and allow the Republicans to crumble beneath their own weight. This is a terrible idea. First of all, we live in an information environment right now where this attention economy demands every single split second of your time, from your phone screens to your radio in your car to the TV in your home. You're always having calls for your attention. And to think that as a party, Democrats could just sit back, let bad things happen, and expect the American people to put two and two together is a complete misreading of the American populace since about 1980. People need to be told. It needs to be drawn out for them. The Democratic Party could do worse than to go find some people from pro wrestling. Learn about the kayfabe, learn about the heels and the faces and how storytelling actually works. Because that's what politics is storytelling. Telling folks about our tribe, our people, our nation, our shared values, our goals, our dreams, our aspirations. You don't just sit back and let the people figure that out on their own. Because when you do, a demagogue like Trump steps in and fills that information vacuum and gives them an enemy to hate, gives them a villain to vilify, gives them a story that doesn't necessarily include all of us. And in fact, the voters out there are mostly in agreement with me. There was a recent poll. See if I can see who put this poll out. It doesn't have the name there, but a recent poll showed that 40% of voters out there, 2 out of 5 voters, don't think the Democratic Party has any strategy at all for responding to Trump. And another quarter of them, 24%, say, oh yeah, they got a strategy, all right, but it ain't working. So 64% of voters, almost 2 out of 3 voters, think the Democrats aren't doing anything or what they are doing isn't working. Only 10% of those surveyed thought the Democrats had a good strategy. So that's why Bernie Sanders is out there on his fighting oligarchy tour, drawing once again standing room only crowds in places like Kenosha, Wisconsin. 4,000 people on Friday came out in Kenosha, Wisconsin for Bernie. The next morning in Altoona, Wisconsin, he had 2,600 people show up in a town of less than 10,000. And in a suburb outside Detroit, he spoke to a crowd of 9,000 that filled a packed gym, 2 overflow rooms, and the parking lot outside, according to the New Republic. So again, Sanders gets it. You've got to go to the people. You've got to talk to them. Nobody's going to read some dear colleague letter that Schumer puts together. Nobody's going to go out of their way to find the C-SPAN clip of Hakeem Jeffries saying, you know, the same boring general trite stuff that he says. Oh, the American people don't like Trump messing with our... Stop it. Get out on the road and tell the story. But the reason guys like Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer can't tell that story is they are so deeply embedded with the donor class, they can't consider even threatening their position. Can't consider calling out oligarchy, calling out inequality, calling out the massive wealth disparities in this country, because that's the donor class's, that's their bread and butter, man. That's what they're living by. They love that disparity. They love having all the money. So we have to do something radically different. And so there's Bernie Sanders out there doing something radically different. And this is putting the pressure on the Republicans, both Sanders and now Tim Walz, going out to these Republican districts where the congressmen have been ordered by leadership to no longer hold the town hall meetings because the town hall meetings keep having people standing up and yelling at them. And Donald Trump desperately trying to wave it away as paid agitators, paid protesters. I love this theory. I love this conspiracy theory on the right that people have to be paid to be pissed off at him. Like, you know, I'm pissed off at him for free. Can someone send me some of that pissed off at Republicans money? Where can I get paid to be pissed off at Republicans? It'd be nice, wouldn't it? This is more of what we need from more of the Democrats out there. But so far, the only ones that seem to get it are Sanders and Walls, AOC, Jasmine Crockett, Maxwell Frost, Jamie Raskin. Why can't they be in charge of this party? Who is our leadership, and why is it so terrible? Yesterday, we talked a little bit about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Secretary of Health and Human Services, who's doing everything he can to downplay the measles outbreak that's going on in West Texas and a little bit of New Mexico. Over 200 hospitalizations, a couple of deaths already. But that's not the only disease he's got a soft spot for. There's this other disease out there called HPV, the human papillomavirus. Now, this is a virus that is spread through sexual contact and can lead to 6 different types of cancers, notably cancer of the throat. And not to put too fine a point on it, but you get it from oral sex. Okay, you get it from oral sex. This is famously Michael Douglas got a case of this cancer that he said came from his frequent cunnilingus of his wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones. So yeah, it's terrible, but we have a vaccine for it. The HPV vaccine is very, very effective. It has to be given at a young age before the onset of sexual activity. And an analysis from Scotland, where they have school-based programs promoting universal HPV vaccination, they showed no cases of cervical cancer in fully immunized women who received their first HPV shot at age 12 or 13. No cases. Now, in the United States, the HPV vaccine has been credited with a 79% reduction in the incidence of cervical precancer in women ages 20 to 24. This was introduced back in 2006 and initially only approved for girls and young women. But now they're recommending the HPV vaccination for everyone, male and female, through the age of 26. But it's better if you get vaccinated earlier, from ages 9 to 14. Takes a couple doses if you get the vaccine that young. After age 15, it takes about 3 doses. But now, the statistics show only about 61% of the adolescents aged 13 to 17 have completed their HPV vaccination series. Now, where Kennedy comes in on this is he continues to misinform people about the effectiveness and the dangers of the HPV vaccine. Kennedy has been trying to discredit these things. He says that the HPV vaccine can cause cancer, which is completely discredited. There's absolutely no evidence to back that up. He says the vaccine can cause cancer when, in fact, the HPV vaccine helps reduce 6 different types of cancers. He has benefited financially, Kennedy has, from referring clients to legal challenges against the vaccine manufacturer. And during his confirmation hearings, he pledged that he would maintain the CDC's current vaccine safety monitoring system and back recommended vaccine schedules. But we can see what he's done with that. He lied his ass off, and now he's continuing to undermine these vaccines. He would not disavow his prior statements that the HPV vaccine was dangerous and defective. The amount of suffering and death that we could face from this one man undermining the greatest scientific achievement of humankind, I don't know. We will be calculating this for years and years. We got more interference from the Trump administration on the functioning of our government. This comes in via news that Citibank was among a few different financial institutions that had received orders to freeze the funds of that were designated by the Environmental Protection Agency as part of what they call the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. It's a $27 billion fund. Citibank was administering some of these funds in certain accounts when they get note from the FBI to freeze those funds that are going out to various groups. And Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, is writing to the Attorney General and the FBI Director Kash Patel asking what's going on here, because the claim is that the groups using these EPA funds are involved in fraud, criminal fraud, and they're using these threats to freeze these funds. Citibank has until March 15th to provide more information on this, according to the details that were shared today. Ars Technica is reporting on this, and Citibank says, well, we just have to because it's legally required to follow instructions from the Department of Treasury, and those agencies ordered Citibank, quote, to pause all further disbursements from the GGRF accounts, including those held by Climate United, one of the groups that uses those funds, until further notice, end quote. And Citibank says, we are not vested with discretion to second-guess the government's concerns regarding the misconduct, waste, conflicts of interest, and potential fraud that the government has stated is happening. Once again, trying to use the strong arm of the law to go against policies they don't like. In this case, trying to fight back against climate change that they don't believe exists, or if they do believe exists, they just don't want to hear about it. It's the time-honored Trump position of, if we don't measure it, nobody will know it's happening. A Climate United spokesperson told Ars Technica, quote, this is the EPA's latest attempt to unlawfully dismantle the congressionally appropriated National Clean Investment Fund. We remain focused on investing in projects that save Americans money, create jobs, and strengthen local communities. Our legally binding contract with EPA cannot lawfully be terminated based on unsupported claims and misinformation, and we will continue to pursue legal action to protect the communities we serve. We got a new poll out from CNN, and this one is showing that a majority of Americans are pissed off about the way Donald Trump is handling the economy, with lower ratings than at any point during his first term. According to the poll, 56% of Americans disapprove of Trump's economic actions, while 52% disapprove of how he's handled the federal budget, and 61% disapprove of his tariffs specifically. This comes on the heels of the stock market crashing, continuing to plummet, the S&P 500, all losing every bit of the gains that they have made since the inauguration and continuing to plummet. 53% of Americans also have an unfavorable view of Elon Musk. 62% said Musk had neither the experience nor judgment to make changes to the way the government works. And 62% also believe that the Doge cuts will go too far and important federal government programs will be shut down. It's starting to catch up with them. And it's good that, like I said earlier, how Bernie Sanders and Tim Walz are going out and making hay out of this. The people are pissed. And if we can just marshal the forces to understand that there are better alternatives out there, we can really strike here while the iron is hot. That's not just happening in the United States. The rest of the world has got a problem with these tariffs and the way Trump is handling what is a large part of the global economy. There is a huge Boycott USA movement that is taking place all around the world, Canada and Europe, all looking at alternatives to the United States goods,
finding, putting together apps that help people find where their goods came from. Folks, we are going to experience what we have put other countries through when it comes to sanctions and boycotts and political retribution. This is going to get worse before it gets better. And let's just hope that the Democratic Party and whoever arises to challenge for the presidency in the next couple of years can make this point and make it stick. I was talking yesterday about how frustrating it is that going all the way back to Reagan, the polls consistently show that Americans trust Republicans more on the economy than Democrats, even though every Republican administration in my lifetime has crashed the economy in one way or the other. Yet Democrats never get any credit. And Democrats, they always come back and fix it. And like, what is it? What was the stat? It was 50 million jobs created under Democratic presidents versus 1 million under Republicans since Reagan, I think it was. I might not exactly have those numbers perfectly, but it is a huge number where the Democrats are just so much obviously better for the economy. Maybe this will be the time. Maybe with the oncoming Trump depression, we can finally turn that number around and people will start to trust the Democrats more on the economy than the Republicans. Ah, yes, that music means it's time for our regular segment on Boycott Idaho, why you should avoid the handmade state, talking particularly about the Idaho potato, because no state, no red state, is more directly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. So go without potatoes. You can do without. You don't need French fries. Get yourself some onion rings. You don't need that baked potato. Get yourself a nice salad. Plus, when you boycott Idaho, you don't have to worry about hurting black folks because hardly any of them live there. The reason for Boycott Idaho today comes via a story we hear out of the West Ada School District. That would probably be, I guess, Meridian, Idaho, more likely. But the big metro area. So I just want to point this out, that what's this story I'm about to tell you isn't happening in Athol or Dick Shooter or any small... Yes, there's really a town in Idaho called Dick Shooter. It's not happening in some rural small town. This is happening in the biggest city in the state, right? This is happening in West Ada County, the biggest county, most populated county. And it's happening at the Lewis and Clark Middle School. The teacher there is named Sarah Inama, and she's teaching world civilization in a sixth grade class. She has been told by school administrators that she has to take down a couple of signs in her room because these signs are violating school policy. The district policy that does not allow teachers to promote personal opinions in today's political environment. That the stuff posted in the school for our sixth graders to see should be content neutral. And respect other people's rights to express differing opinions. Okay. Hey, on first blush, you might think that sounds reasonable, right? We don't want some teacher putting up, you know, Kamala Harris for president, right? Or putting up Republicans or duty heads or, you know, something like that. That we got to be content neutral. You can't be expressing a personal point of view. What was the terribly offensive sign that this teacher had put up in front of the sixth graders? I'll just have to describe it to you. It's a black sign that has the words, "Everyone is welcome here." The "is welcome here" is in white text. The "everyone" is in multiple colors, yellow, green, red. And then below "everyone is welcome here," there are a bunch of hands raised with a heart in the middle of the palm of the hand. And the hands are, there's a white hand and beige hand and a brown hand and a black hand. And those are repeated over and over. That's it. That's the sign. Everyone is welcome here. And people's hands of different skin tones is not content neutral in Idaho. Is expressing a personal opinion in Idaho. Is restricting people who might have different opinions from feeling free to express them. You can't go tell kids that everyone of every color is welcome here.
What will the racists think? You'll offend the racists who think that not everyone is welcome here. There was another sign. The other sign she had was, everyone in this room is welcome, important, accepted, respected, encouraged, valued, and equal. Well, we can't be telling the sixth graders that. First of all, in the United States of America, it's a lie. Not everyone is welcome, important, accepted, respected, encouraged, valued, and equal. But damn it, it's something we should aspire to, isn't it? This is the state of Idaho in a nutshell. Just the very idea of broaching the subject that people of all races could be equal and welcome and valid sets their hair on fire. Oh my God, it's that woke ideology, that radical DEI CRT coming to get our kids, teaching them that black kids and Asian kids and Hispanic kids and white kids are all welcome. Well, we can't have that. Now, Inama, the teacher, argues that her sign aligns with the district's own Explorer Way posters. Now, the district, the school district, already has some posters that encourage students to welcome others and embrace diversity. So, how is that any different from everyone is welcome here? Everyone is accepted. The West Ada School District has declined multiple requests for interviews on this subject and refers back to a statement that reiterates their policy without addressing any of the specific concerns. There you have it. Yet another reason to boycott Idaho, because in the state of Idaho, telling all kids they are welcome is controversial. From the beginning of this second Trump administration, there has been a concerted attack on transgender identity, transgender people, including a complete ban on transgender service members that is allowing transgender people to serve openly in the United States military. It is currently tied up in court, and the New Republic is reporting that a federal judge stopped a hearing on the ban because the lawyers from the Department of Justice hadn't actually read any of the policies that they were defending. This is under the court of District Judge Anna Reyes, and there were three reports that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth cited in his policy banning transgender members of the military. Part of it says, quote, service members who have a current diagnosis or history of, or exhibit symptoms consistent with, gender dysphoria are disqualified from military service. Also banning individuals had, quote, history of cross-sex hormone therapy or a history of sex reassignment or genital reconstruction surgery as treatment for gender dysphoria or in pursuit of a sex transition, end quote. Now, the judge, Judge Reyes, said the policy was egregiously misquoting three of the reports that were cited, and was shocked that the Department of Justice lawyers couldn't tell that these reports were being misquoted. Obviously, they had not read them. So she ordered a break and asked them to review the policies being cited. This is what they found when they resumed one of the studies, according to the judge. Hegseth put out this study that said that transgender service members hurt troop readiness and weaken the unit. The transgender soldiers will make your platoon less ready and less strong. But the report that they were quoting concluded the exact opposite. The report actually found that transgender service members were more deployable. They had fewer lapses in their service compared to those diagnosed with depression, and those people weren't automatically excluded from service. That's not all, though. Reyes went through each of the findings cited to the ban and found that virtually every one of them contradicted support for the policy of banning transgender service people. Now, they make all sorts of excuses about this. They try to say, oh, you know, if we have transgender people in the military, then the military has to pay for all this medical treatment for all their transitions. Okay, so when soldiers get diabetes, do we pay for their insulin? When soldiers get depression, do we pay for their treatments, their counseling? When what they don't understand is that the gender-affirming care for transgender people is medical care. You know, that whether or not the people who are against this thing, well, it's all in their mind. Okay, so is depression. So is anxiety. So is bipolar, right? And I don't say that to say that transgender identity is any sort of disorder. Just to say that it's also a mental thing. This idea, this need to try to purge transgender people also comes with a little bit of shade. Well, I should say a lot of shade, in that they are trying to make a more general point here. The order banning the transgender soldiers, this part's from the New Republic, says that the armed forces have been afflicted with radical gender ideology that is inconsistent with the honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle of military service. Now, they also go on to say, a man's assertion that he is a woman and his requirement that others honor this falsehood is not consistent with the humility and selflessness required of a service member. It's always the trans women, right? They don't seem to have the issue with the trans man. The trans women they always have a problem with. But this idea that the adoption of a gender identity inconsistent with an individual's sex conflicts with a soldier's commitment to an honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle is one that's designed to demonize trans people, to say that trans people are living a lie, that they are trying to fool you, that they are openly mocking and denigrating any source of honor and truthfulness. And that's just disgusting, because what's happening here is just trying to deny that trans people exist at all, which is really the core of what the anti-trans hate comes down to, is a disbelief that trans people actually exist, that there is validity to feeling that you are male or female, contradictory to whatever bits might be between your legs. And I know why this is hard for some people out there. I know why the right-wing conservative rural types think this way, because, you know, they're raised on a farm or they have basic understandings of biology, and everywhere they look, they see male and they see female, and they think that it's obvious and everybody should be that way. But what it really gets down to are people that don't truly understand the notion of freedom in this country and what makes America truly great. Is that you can be who you are. You can be Muslim, you can be gay, you can be atheist, you can be transgender. And that it's all valid. It's just so confusing and maddening to me why anybody else gives a shit how anybody else portrays themselves, presents themselves. Why do you care? What does it change in your personal life? Well, I'll tell you what it changes for them. Is it they fear that it opens a door that would otherwise be closed. If we openly allow people to be trans, we celebrate their trans identity, we allow them to be a part of our civic life in the military and in the workplace, then their little boy could recognize the transgender identity he has and recognize he feels more like a she. And he'd have examples to look at. He'd see people could be trans and be okay. And that would be easing his transition into her, recognizing her true identity, and being unafraid to live it. That's the thing that frightens them. That's what they're, when they're talking about grooming, when they say, oh, you're grooming the kids. You're not grooming any kids. Nobody's grooming a kid to be gay or trans. What we are doing is saying, hey, if you are gay or trans, that's okay. But that's the problem for them, because for them, gay and trans is not okay. To those conservatives, to those people that are still so bigoted against gay and trans people, it's not okay. Whether they feel that from a religious perspective or just their own personal perspective, they think it's wrong, that it's incorrect, that you shouldn't be that way. And if we allow people to be that way, then we're saying it's okay to be that way, and then some of the kids will be that way, and we don't want that. It sure will be nice when people can grow up and get over this and understand that kids are who they are. It's not a Build-A-Bear workshop. You know, I'd like to build myself a straight boy. No. If you're not prepared for your kid to be a trans girl, then don't have kids. You don't get to determine who and what they are. They determine who and what they are.
Then it goes down smooth. Hey!
Well, that's all the time we've got for today. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky at radicalruss.com and nowhere else. Not Facebook, not Instagram, not Twitter X. You can support this podcast financially by donating to @RadicalRuss on Venmo, $RadRuss on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalruss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.